It's Ian Pickus. We are back in the congressional corner with Vermont Representative at Large Becca Ballant, a Democrat in office since 2023. Congresswoman Ballant, welcome back.
Always happy to chat with you, Ian.
So Tuesday is town meeting day in Vermont, but it's also Trump's address to a joint session of Congress. What's your plan?
The plan is to be in the hall for as long as I can stand it, because he is somebody who we know lies repeatedly and misleads the public. And so I'm going to see how long I can stomach it. But I think it's important in this moment when he is attacking so many of our institutions to be a witness to this and to not turn away. I have to be engaged.
Let me ask you a question that I just asked your colleague, Senator Peter Welch, because it's the first time that we've had all of you on the show since the new Congress started. You obviously opposed President Trump's re-election bid. Are things worse than you expected them to be from your view?
Yes. The level of chaos and confusion and incompetence on the part of Elon Musk and others working with him is beyond what any of us imagined. In terms of the framework that they put forward for trying to dismantle government and go after civil liberties, which was put forward by the Heritage Foundation Project 2025, I knew that that was going to be the blueprint. And so they're basically, despite Trump's trying to disavow it on the campaign trail and saying he had nothing to do with it, he has put many of the architects of Project 2025 into the government. And so that piece I'm not surprised about, because we warned folks that that would happen. But in terms of the sheer incompetence of, you know, firing thousands of workers when you don't even know what they do. And I was reminded of it this morning that they fired people that protect us from bird flu and from Ebola, and they fired people who protect our nuclear arsenal. And I could just go on, and they do not know what they're doing. And I think that is the most terrifying thing to try to convey to constituents, that they are hiding under this umbrella of, oh, we're just looking for waste, fraud, and abuse. Firing people that are actually serving the needs of my constituents is not trimming waste, fraud, and abuse. Firing people who work for the VA or who make sure that Head Start programs are running, that's not fighting waste, fraud, and abuse. And as I said, I believe it's an indication of incompetence.
Does your office have a handle on how many federal government workers or services offices have already been affected statewide in Vermont, given the freeze and the other cuts?
It's such a great question, and I talk with my colleagues about this across the country as well. We're getting such little information from this administration that the way that we often find out about the cuts or the fact that people can't draw down federal, whether it's grants or funds that they had coming to them, is people reach out to the office. We do know that the cuts that were in the budget that the Republicans just passed, not a single Democrat voted for it, would mean $12 billion in cuts to school lunch and breakfast programs. That would be over 47,000 Vermont children. We know 150,000 Vermonters would be impacted by the cuts to Medicaid. We've got, I believe, 8,000 federal workers in Vermont, and some of them have been fired. Some of them are in limbo, have no idea whether they'll have jobs. Others are being told that their jobs are now being changed without having their contract changed. All of this is in violation of federal law, especially when it comes to freezing funds that Congress has appropriated. We are the purse strings. We spend the money, and to have Trump not stay in his executive branch lane and come over into our lane means that the democracy itself is at risk. And that is one of my biggest fears, that my colleagues, my Republican colleagues in Congress, are willingly giving up the power of the legislative branch, and that democracy only works if you have a check and balance within the system.
I want to ask a question about that budget vote. You talked about the framework that was voted through without a vote to spare for the Republicans. Now, you're on the budget committee, and yes. You and other Democrats are warning, you're shouting it to the rooftops that cuts are coming to Medicaid and Medicare, SNAP, those types of programs. Republicans have been saying that's all overblown, and they've simply given committees discretion. What's the truth?
Well, look, we know where the money is. We know what money they have to go after to meet these targets. And they cannot come up with the kind of money that they want for these tax cuts for the wealthiest in this country if they do not go after some of these programs that are serving Americans. We know this. This is not, you know, they're trying to do what I believe is a disingenuous argument. Oh, we haven't put it in the blueprint. We know where the money is. We know where they have to go. And also, here's the other thing. This is the other reason why I do not trust them, is because in committee, we were in committee on the budget for 12 hours, and we continued to bring up amendments that said, just to be clear, we will not be touching Social Security, or we will not be touching Medicaid. We made these amendments really clear to the blueprint. They would not support a single one. They were up or down votes of, are we protecting Medicaid? Are we protecting Social Security? So that is another reason why I know they are not being honest. And the other piece that I want your listeners to understand, this plan will add a significant amount to the deficit. And Republicans who have been screaming at us in the budget committee for years now, saying they would never vote for anything that increased, you know, the deficit, all fell in line. And so I just, you know, I am somebody who always tries to work across the aisle to find those partners. They are not negotiating with us in good faith, and they haven't since the moment that Speaker Johnson took over in the House. They walk back every deal. They walk away from every handshake. And so now I do not trust them.
Obviously, you're opposed to the goals of this administration and the Congress, as we've been talking about. What do you say to the argument that this is what the voters voted for? I mean, they sent Trump back to the White House and they gave Republicans control of Congress, and they did not enable the Democrats to really have a check on all of that in this term.
Okay, so a couple things. One, what we know from the deep canvassing and polling that happened after the election, people voted for this administration because they said they were going to lower costs for regular Americans. They were going to lower the cost of prescription drugs. They were going to lower the cost of groceries. They were going to cap interest rates on credit cards. I can go on and on. None of these things are being brought forward by this administration. Nobody voted for this chaos. Nobody voted for massive cuts to the federal workforce, for programs that help regular families who are trying to get by. Of course, across the board, we believe in rooting out waste, fraud, and abuse wherever it exists. However, you do not go in slashing programs that you don't even know what they do. I'll give you another example. So we slash USAID. It's less than 1% of the budget. Who is it hurting the most? It's actually hurting the farmers in the United States who grow the crops that they sell to USAID to help them make the margins. Nobody voted for that. And so I think, you know, we're seeing this already, Trump, his numbers are tanking. Musk certainly is incredibly unpopular. People want to know that those programs that they rely on, Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, are going to be protected. They want to know that when a veteran goes to the hospital in White River Junction in Vermont, they're going to be fully staffed. And so this is not, I think, what the American people ask for. And we will continue to work with Republicans for where the most waste, fraud, and abuse is right now in our government, which is the Pentagon budget. And we haven't heard anything about that yet.
So you had a telephone town hall the other day with Senator Sanders and Senator Welch, and I understand that more than 30,000 Vermont residents, which is really saying something, took part in it. So what were your takeaways? I mean, this is a chance to check in with how people are feeling. What did you find out?
People are angry. They're anxious. They are worried about the future for themselves and their families. They are furious that Elon Musk has access to their personal private information. They don't feel like the United States should be standing on the side of North Korea and Iran and Russia against our allies. So there was a lot of fear and wariness, and we really and also the deep desire to be involved in some way, to do what they can. And it's one of the things that I've been saying to Vermonters for weeks now, that I need folks to check back in. I know a lot of people checked out after the election. There was certainly fatigue and exhaustion. You know, we have these incredibly long presidential campaigns in this country, and I think by the end, people were just, they were just done. And I've been hearing that a lot from my constituents. You know, Becca, I'm sorry, I just can't. I can't watch the news right now. I just can't be engaged because it's just so depressing. But what we're seeing now is people are ready to check back in. They understand that the stakes are incredibly high because we have a president right now who is, you know, signing executive orders that are in violation of federal law and the Constitution, and are trying to usurp the power of another co-equal branch of government, that being Congress. And there, I felt a renewed energy, and people are ready to do what they can to fight for this democracy.
One of the first high-profile votes in this new Congress was for the Laken-Riley Act. And since it's our first time speaking, you voted no. Can you explain why?
Yeah, I can. There were significant concerns about the legality of stripping away due process rights from people. And so, look, what happened to Laken Riley was horrific. And I absolutely understand that this is, you know, it's such a personal issue for so many people. But the bill itself didn't pass constitutional muster from my perspective in terms of giving people their you know, presumption of innocence and due process. It also gave individual state attorneys general the power to challenge federal immigration law and do, you know, random deportation enforcement on their own. That made me very uncomfortable. But this is a pretext for the Trump administration to round up people into holding camps. And we have already seen some of this happening. They will accuse an immigrant of a crime, or even people who aren't here illegally. People who are here legally with their papers being rounded up, and in some cases even Americans who are non-immigrants, who just happen to have dark skin, being rounded up by this administration. And I knew where this would end. And we're seeing exactly what we feared, which is that people's rights are being violated. And of course, you want to make sure anyone in this country is following the law. But time and time again, we see that the people who are committing the most crimes in this country are not people who come here as immigrants or migrants. It is coming from people who are citizens and longtime residents here. And this is not a fix for our immigration system. It really isn't. And, you know, I am still so frustrated that during the campaign, the Republicans walked away from a bipartisan deal that was crafted in the Senate because Trump told him he wanted to run on immigration issues. So I am ready to have a deep conversation about comprehensive immigration reform. People want a safe and secure border. They want pathways to citizenship. And we also want legal paths for people to work here, because certainly in Vermont, we know we are completely dependent on migrant labor when it comes to our agricultural sector. And I know we're not unique in that. And we need an orderly border, and we need to invest more money in that management and not be scapegoating immigrants to this country.
Have you gotten reports about a newly emboldened ICE or other federal authorities coming to Vermont and, you know, showing up on the streets?
My office has not heard a lot about that. It certainly is happening in other districts, but we're monitoring this closely. And I know, you know, we had that terrible slaying of a Border Patrol agent in Vermont. Mm-hmm. And so we're in close contact with the Border Patrol. But again, one of the things that was alarming to me and to both our senators is there were changes made about funding to our Border Patrol in the north in the hours that certain Border Patrol stops were opened, stations were opened. And so, again, we need comprehensive reform. We need a system that makes sense. And I find with this particular Republican conference, so much of the things that we vote on are messaging bills. They're not actually solving the problem, and that concerns me.
You have reintroduced a bill called the Peer for Mental Health. What does that do?
So what we've learned is that we have a crisis across the country, and specifically in Vermont. I've heard so much about this. It's legislation that would support peer mental health training for teachers, school personnel, parents, caregivers, and students, because what we've realized is the need is so, so great. And sometimes youth have to wait in order to get professional help. So it's very important that people are trained in basic, you know, identification of, you know, what's happening for folks when they're going through mental health struggles. You know, we see that an alarming 76% of public schools are reporting concern about depression, anxiety, and trauma in their students since the start of the pandemic. And I have two teenagers myself. And so we talk about how the pandemic did not create the mental health crisis, but it certainly has exacerbated it. So this is mental health, you know, first aid training. It's evidence-based, and it's similar to how students are taught to respond to other emergencies using CPR. It is that sort of initial mental health emergency training for folks. And I just want to give Vermonters whatever tool that I can give them to help in this moment.
I just have about 1 minute left, and I want to ask you this question because you raised it earlier with respect to Congress ceding its power of the purse to the White House. A lot of people on the show are talking about the likelihood of a constitutional crisis now. The administration has talked about ignoring court rulings that it doesn't like potentially. What happens if we find ourselves on that road? I mean, a lot of people like you who are in Congress say it's happening already.
So a couple things, and I get asked this a lot, and I think about it a lot. First thing I want viewers to know is that we're actually having a lot of success in the courts. And so even though Democrats do not have the House, the Senate, or the White House, and our legislation tools are limited, there are amazing groups that are working to take the Trump administration to court on their executive orders and policies that are in violation of the federal law and the Constitution. So I've been keeping up with the work that Lambda Legal is doing, following, you know, what is happening to the LGBTQ community and bringing the Trump administration to court on that. I'm following others like Democracy Forward and Democracy Docket, which are also keeping track of the litigation. But, you know, when you come right down to it, we are an experiment. This democracy is an experiment. It's a 250-year-old experiment in the separation of powers, in the checks and balances. We've never been in this moment. We've never had a president who is willing to consistently test the boundaries of his power. And the framers thought there would be a vigorous pushback from the Congress when that happened. So you ask me what will happen if there is a constitutional crisis that comes from Trump defying a Supreme Court order? I'm going to be really clear with you. It's going to take all of us. And I know when I have said to people, that is when Americans across the political spectrum, across the country, need to take to the streets and have their voices heard. Because we are the ones that collectively protect the democracy.
We've been speaking with Vermont Congresswoman Becca Ballant, an at-large Democrat now in her second term. We're always grateful for your time, Congresswoman, and we will talk to you a little down the road.
Thank you so much, Ian.